Welcome to the Agile People FikaCast. We talk about how to navigate with agility in our organizations.
So we think you are the expert.
Is that what you meant by expert? It's been a long time since. Well, don't get me wrong, the majority of my career has still been in finance. It's just that I chose not to just be an accountant. And unfortunately, my wife is an accountant, but so I vicariously still live that accounting thing through her, because she has month end, she has period end, she has year end. She has the auditors coming, all those things that are scary to an accountant, you know, those milestones of inefficiency, you know, and it just makes my heart weep when I listen to her talk about the same. So if I think, I was an accountant 25 years ago, and I'm thinking, why are you still doing this? Seriously. So she goes, oh, shut up, I know you don't want to be an accountant. I was like, no, there's good reason as well. It's
interesting, because you remember from the podcast with Rickard, you know, they explained the history of the budget, which I thought was interesting, because it's really the same. We try to improve traditional thinking instead of thinking new, which is the same in management and leadership.
No, absolutely, and they do this. They do the same thing in budgeting as they do in leadership as well. They think putting the tools in place that makes the budget look nice and shiny and whatever, but still follow the same practice of how they compile it. After the call, I tried to get my wife to see a different, but she was firm on the traditions of budget setting. I was like, okay,
very hard to show.
you have no idea how sometimes the smallest thing, particularly around finance, is not the most sexy of subjects in its own right, but the fighting that can go with it, because people are so held onto those traditional values. And as we see, I mean, this is the exasperation for yourself, Pia Maria, is that you found that in HR, you know, and it's just so debilitating watching people just firmly grasp onto this, like it's 500 years of history that we must maintain. They're like,
yeah,
okay, just take 5 minutes to kind of think, you could do something different and better.
But the thing is that humans are very good at adding on things to problems. So
yeah,
we solve problems by adding something new, not remove things. So things are needs to be, that's sort of the human behavior. I guess that 90% of all humans are behaving that way most of the time. Of course, we can all do it in some small things, but especially the things that we feel very strongly for, maybe it's harder to actually remove things for.
Yeah, well,
you need, as you said, invest some brain capacity or in time to actually see and do those things if you want to really change something.
I guess you need to see that better alternative, don't you? If it's, you know, something to replace it, because otherwise, if you take that one thing away from them, and they've got nothing else, then they're immediately feeling, well, I feel now worthless. I feel my job's at risk. I feel that my whole being is being exposed, you know? Because when I sort of flipped to become a consultant, I was still going into sort of finance organizations or finance teams, and they would still be there with these, like, you know, coffee-stained, dog-eared instructions of how to do something. And they couldn't, 9 times out of 10, they couldn't tell you what it was that they were doing and why they were doing it. It was given to them, and they just followed it blindly. And I said to them, I used to say to them, now I could say this without risk and stuff like that, say, listen, see this month end, don't do that. See who screams after you don't do it. And then next month, you know, you could correct it. No, nobody was brave enough to do it. But I thought, you know what, you continue doing something that you've got no understanding of what it is that you're doing.
Yeah. But I did that one. I was working. It was HR though, but it was reporting. So yeah. It was 120,000 employees around the globe, and then I stopped sending some reports. They didn't notice for several months, but when they noticed, they checked every month.
we took a change in that. Maybe we're sidetracking from the subject, but it's behavioral change. In a company, it was 200 employees or something like that. It's not very big. But we decided to remove all meetings across teams, across the, just to see which one hurt not having. So and we took that and we continued that for 4 weeks or something. And then people started to feel that things were hurting. And we want this one back, or we want this part of this meeting back. Mm. And it was sort of a rebirth of what was good and removal of what was bad.
Now, sometimes you have to shock the change, don't you? Mm. You know, it's sometimes the gently approach doesn't have the legs. It's sometimes you just have to shock it and disrupt completely. My last company, which was a big investment company, I did write this case study, which I called the case for positive disruption in finance. Yeah, it was. Everybody liked the idea, and they were like, "Yeah, go ahead, David. You do it. You know." We'll follow behind you and stuff like that. I was like, no, I kind of need you to kind of come alongside me. And it's funny, this company, and they're a big organization, and they categorically told me that, oh, David, we're big traditional organization. You know, even 5 years ago, we operated like Gordon Gekko, you know, and Wall Street and stuff like that, where the guys would still have the red braces and the striped shirts and the slick back hair and all this sort of stuff. You know, they're real bully boys. It was a real boys club and stuff. And I was like, all right, okay. So, and they weren't, so, oh, coming to Agile, that's just, we're nowhere near that. And it's, and I thought, yeah, you're not that. But we, in terms of my team, they practiced Agile. And they were like, David, you can do Scrum, Scrum Master. I'm like, well, I can. That's not to say I'm going to do it. But, could you do a retrospective for us? I'm like, yeah, no problem. We can do that. I says, when was the last time you did a retrospective? 8 months ago. I was like, okay. You're not Agile, really, seriously. You can't even do that. And so the funny thing is, when I got, so I joined Helgi's book club the other week there, and you know the Age of Agile with, sorry, what's his name, Denning?
Stephen Denning.
Stephen Denning, yeah. Mm. Got so many books to read. I can't remember them. I know that you know them all personally, but, you know. It's so I was reading that, and it started off in the early chapters and says the two most agile organizations in the world is this, and I was like, no, they're not. They really are not, because one of them is the one I was at the last year. I was like, not a chance are you even considering yourself agile. Even you admit yourself you're not agile. And then another one that Helgi brought up was Barclays Bank. Now, Barclays Bank used to be my business account for my company. And again, you know the device that you have online that you can go and check your account there? It's a little calculator thing. I had that around somewhere. And then it took them 8 weeks for them. Sorry, it took them a year and 8 weeks for them to get me a new one.
The word. So let us have a look a bit on the subject today.
Yes. Sorry,
I didn't want to stop you because we had good things, but today's subject it's about the drawbacks of having overly specific financial objectives, and sometimes it might be good. we prepared ourselves before this week, and we talked about McDonald's, and in that production line, maybe it's really good to have quite specific financial objectives. My experience from working in IT, where you have operational costs and you have development costs, and sometimes someone says from far away, yeah, we have too much operational cost. We need to lower the operational cost, but they are not looking into the actual reality of that product that is living. It might be that there's a lot of technical debt connected to that product, and therefore we have a lot of operational cost. So we cannot just remove or lower the operational cost by just cutting the budget. Because what happened in that situation, people just started to time report in a different way, and they continue to do the work that brought most value to the product. But it was really important to lower that cost, and they got it, but it was a bit too specific and it was too far away from the reality.
I mean, what you want is the most bang for the buck, right?
Of course.
It's not definitely, I mean, always lowering cost, but maybe you should increase cost and then you will get more bang for the buck. Who knows? Maybe you start creating so much value that you become so profitable that it doesn't matter what your cost is. You need to try it, you know. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's about the optimizing the cost itself, though. You know, there is an awful lot of sort of duplication and wasted effort that goes into, you know, the spending of things. You know, as you cost a product or materials and stuff like that, you know, so it's about looking at that and saying, listen, the cost bit is we can't change that. What we need to do is make that cost more efficient in the way that we handle it. You know, you get into the whole kind of just in time in terms of material handling. You get into looking at the sort of value stream in terms of the efforts that go into to, you know, managing that spend. You know, the time involved, who does that labor, you know, how many hands does it go through, how many techs does it need to go through. As well, so it's about looking at that, and you know, an awful lot of companies will sort of look to address that, but again, it comes down to, you know, if you start trying to shave off departments of eyes looking at it and approval levels and all this sort of stuff, then, you know, again, people feel their jobs at risk or their capabilities being lessened and stuff. So but it's ultimately, you know, if you paint the picture, it's about optimizing cost, then and particularly in public sector organizations where it's very key on, because it's the public purse that you're spending for, you know, very noticeable services, you know, social care, housing, etc. It's not, you know. Yeah, but you can flip it equally on private sector and financial services, that as much as they're more revenue generated, I mean, optimizing cost is always a good thing as well, you know. So.
But a very good way of optimizing cost is to remove managers, right? Because everybody will get more. Their salaries are actually maybe the biggest cost of any business. And that's what they did at Morningstar, right? They removed all the managers, and then everybody could have more salary of everybody who was actually creating value, because managers seldom create that much value. They are not kind of the most value-creating unit of a company. You see what I mean?
And so, their argument is always that their argument is always that if you remove that layer, then you know, that you increase the risk. You know, so. But yeah, obviously, a company like Morningstar works very effectively and dispels that rumor. So maybe it is about, instead of trying to get all the larger type organizations to jump at this, you know, maybe the medium ones that are the sort of key ones that prove that this can work. You know, and it's.
Martin, you did some research before today's week about things that could happen in an organization if you are overly specific on the financial targets. So what did you find there?
I always go back to Ken Nevin when I'm thinking about anything. That's my looking glass. That's how I understand the world. And I think if you're overly specific in your financial objectives, you are creating hard constraints to any organization. You sort of make the impact of not reaching these objectives catastrophical, more or less. They break in such a hard way, so it's hard for things people to not trying to reach them, and then people start to gain them in different ways. So I think that is a big risk if you make them overly specific. People start to gain them, start to try to find ways to approach them, which is, makes you very short-sighted.
It nourishes the short-term behaviors and bad behaviors as well, like competition and brown-nosing and politics and all these bad behaviors that we see in organizations, because everybody needs to reach that specific detail target that they have set to get their reward and so on. But now we're going to the performance management part.
But it's very connected. Especially to managers, the financial goals are usually connected to performance goal for a manager. And I have seen several times that managers tend to do counterproductive things just to fulfill their financial goals, and with that, their performance goals, because they are measured on that. Measured on it. So they... if they fulfill the budget, then they will get more bonus end of the year, more or less.
And it feels good to do things. I have exercises where we can try. People try to, if you follow this checklist, people are very good at following checklists because it's easy. You start to do that and then you stop to think, because there's a checklist of things you need to do. Overly specific things feels like a checklist, I think. So just want, if I reach this, then I'm done. I don't have the possibility to reflect and think about things. I'm just doing stuff.
And finance people like that. They like the order of things. But the problem I see that, Martin, is that people go down a checklist and just ticking it off as they perform it. And what the bit that they miss doing is the holistic view of, so what is the overall impact of me doing this? That's fine of me mechanically going through these steps and hey, that feels like a win. But if I think about my budget setting days, we would do the whole scientific thing, going down the list of, you know, here's the costs, here's the revenues, here's, you know, individual and departmental costs, et cetera, et cetera. And so you do the scientific of applying, you know, 10% here, 5% uplift here, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got various tools that allow you to do that much more quickly these days. But what generally managers will do, you hand it back to them and say, oh, actually, that looks too high or that looks too low. And just without rhyme or reason or appearing rhyme or reason, it will say, can you change that? Can you add 100,000 to that? And go, why? Because the way that he looks at that, because he's not involved in the mechanics of compiling it, he just wants to see that his bottom line looks good, because as you mentioned there, Daniel, his budget is sort of his performance and bonus is measured on that, and you know, and that alone. And so there's, so you as the person compiling the budget, no holistic view. The guy who is going to sign off the budget, no holistic view. And so everybody has these little carvings of their view of the world, and it's and as you mentioned, it starts to create some unsavory behaviors, shall we say, ethical fading and all that sort of stuff, you know. It's and that combined with the budget setting process is always done very rushed at a period when you'd much rather be doing, or sorry, you need to be doing something else. So that year end closing, you know, the corporate reporting, your sort of you know, wider or regulatory type reporting capability as well. This is all kind of all mismatched together. And from when you look at all the finance staff, they're all stressed out trying to compile that.
Yeah, and always at the end, or it starts in August somewhere, September, and you need to create, set the budget for the next year. And there's a lot of rush and everyone is just, yeah, we need to just fix the budget. We need to set everything and everything needs to be in place. And then everyone after needs to clear it and blah, blah, blah. There's so many steps. Just because
but you know you're important.
We are approaching,
if you're going
a
to a budget
year.
Meeting, you're an important person. And that's why they keep this ritual. Because, yes, we are doing the rain dance. It doesn't make it rain, but, you know, it feels good to do it.
Yeah, you have to be seen to be doing it, absolutely.
Yeah. That's a ritual that makes people important.
But you had an example there, Pia, I think about the fishermen and then the fiscal year and the challenges that.
Because there was the fisherman and the accountant. This is a story from Bjarte Bosnes. And the fisherman says, he's telling the accountant, I'm fishing for 5 months and then I have 5 months off. What is the accountant's question then to the fisherman? It's, what do you do the rest of the 2 months that's left on this year? And because this is the rhythm of his fishing is 5 months, it's not a full year. But many times you focus just on a calendar year. But why do we focus on a calendar year? I mean, the business rhythm has nothing to do with the accounting as such. It's two separate things, really. So every business has its rhythm. And it's not always the same as a calendar year. We don't need it to be a calendar year either. You have the HR wheel, same thing. It's a calendar year. You do this when this time of year, that time of year, and so on and so on. But why? Shouldn't we do it as often as we can or want to or find feasible instead of just following a kind of predefined structure of an HR wheel? So we're governed by the wrong things, in this case, the annual thing that, because there is a law and a legal aspect to it that you need to give the, close the books and so on every year.
Yeah, and obey, it's sort of set that we should do it, and it's hard for us to step away and remove behaviors that we have already set. We can add things on top of it, but we are not good at removing behaviors.
No.
Thank you. I think it's good that we start. Thank you. I just want to say that it's good that we turn it around a bit because you started now, Pia Mia. We at Agile People, we have understood that both HR and finance are two big enablers for an Agile organization. We need to have them on board. We have a training today. It will be launched this month. It's about Agile Finance. So it's created by Agile People and Beyond Budgeting. Since we already started, I would like to use the last minutes to talk about what is it that Beyond Budgeting then is saying, and how can we connect that to today's subject about financial objectives.
So the first thing is to break the link between annual budgets, fixed performance targets, and bonuses and rewards. So break that link so that we don't link people's targets to the budgets and to rewards, because then people will just try to reach the targets because they get the reward, not because they really want to, you know, go in that direction or stretch themselves. And then there are also three purposes of the budget. It's the target setting, and that is maybe what we would like to happen. And this is usually what you use as your budget figure, what you would like to happen. But then you need also to make a forecast regarding what you think will happen. And these are two different numbers. And then there is the third number that you need to keep separate from the previous two is the resource allocation. It should be dynamic instead of decided in advance, because there may be things turning up in the middle of the year that we didn't see coming, right? When we live in this complex reality that is changing all the time, we need to all the time be on the outlook for new possibilities and new benefits that could serve us, instead of being tied by a fixed annual budget. So instead, open the bank the whole year instead of having it just open in the autumn when you do the budget. That's some of the things that we learn in this training, and a lot of exercises, of course, discussions.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think Daniel made the point there, Pimera, that HR and finance are in that position of being able to be that the key enablers. And I think maybe a half step that needs to happen there, then, that HR and finance need to find some way of joining forces. Because you know this, and I know this, is that these guys very rarely speak to each other. And if they do, it's never really on the same terms. And so they're kind of, if it has to be a joint force, and I'm not saying that it has to be, but if it's a way of moving things forward, maybe joining forces would be at least a good thing, or at least allies.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, yes. So I'm looking forward to the training, actually.
Yeah.
Are you going to join us?
I'm hoping to, Pimera. Yes, I have. I've not signed up just yet, but I'm.
Great.
Yeah, but I'm hopeful. And when on has it been finalized in terms of location and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's going to be in Stockholm.
Yeah.
Okay,
cool. Yeah. So
I
with that,
check the weather before I come.
So with that, let's end today's fika, and thank you for attending.